It is the People's Show. We welcome into the program Shane Malloy of McKean's and also into Hockey Prospect Radio into their 16th season on NHL Network Radio. Thanks for this, Shane. How are you?
I'm very well, gentlemen. How are you?
We're doing well, and we're starting to look ahead to the draft a little bit more. I mean, just how different has this year been for you in trying to look at the prospects and not having, you know, a full picture as we normally would?
Well, it's significant. I think one of the aspects that makes it more challenging, obviously, is not having the live views, having to watch more video. So thankfully, I have Instat, so that allows me to watch video from a variety of different aspects. So that certainly makes it easier. And I've been using video for, over a decade. But having live views is problematic. Now, look, the majority of the teams should be, actually all the teams should be prepared. There are some teams that may be not prepared, and it's going to come back and haunt them, and we'll see that case study in 5 years down the road. But live views is the biggest issue for me, and I like getting at least 6 to 10 views of a player, and then, you know, probably anywhere from 18 to 20 video of the player, so you have a really well-rounded understanding of who they are. And at the end of the day, we're going to see how this draft plays out comparative to previous drafts and which teams were more prepared than others.
You know, usually, you know, Shane, and we talked about this so much throughout the years, that there are different tiers that go to the in a draft, right? And there usually is a drop-off. When it comes to the tiers that you actually think are really good this year in this year's draft, where is a drop-off, you think, this year? Like, do you have a good idea of where that is, or is that a bit more unpredictable this season?
Well, I look at sort of 12 to 14. That's where maybe the next tier, and I'm not saying that those players after 14 are not going to be second-line players or number three defensemen, most likely in probability based on historical average, they will be. But when you're looking into that top 12, what you're looking for are first and second line players, top two defensemen. I think this draft is going to be more heavily leaned to defense in the first probably 12, 15 picks. So we're going to see how that sort of plays out and where the teams are more comfortable in taking certain players. When in doubt, they tend to go towards forwards because they're a little bit easier to predict moving forward. At the end of the day, I guess in the end of July, we're going to find out.
Well, looking at that top 10, Shane, always good to chat with you, by the way, as well. Michigan's got a few prospects there, a couple of center prospects, a couple of defensemen as well. If you look at those guys and specifically, the centers, who is the one to watch? Because, we don't know where the Canucks are going to fall, but it seems like center or right side of defense is potentially an area. Is there somebody that you're looking in the top 10, maybe those Michigan guys, that kind of stands out to you?
Well, certainly, look, if you're looking at Michigan, Kent Johnson as a centerman, Matthew Berners, another centerman out of Michigan. So both those players, the Vancouver Canucks are looking for centermen, and they're in the top 10. Those are two players to certainly look at. And then there's a host of defensemen, whether it's Luke Hughes or Owen Powers or Samuel Edmondson or Brent Clark. It really depends on what your preference is. I think there's some really strong defensemen that could be first pairing. I'm not going to anoint any of them as number one defensemen because that's really on the development side. But certainly, I think all four of those defensemen could certainly have the potential to be number two defensemen in their future.
We obviously get a lot of questions about Luke Hughes, given brother Quinn is already a Vancouver Canuck. What do you see in Luke Hughes?
Well, I'm hoping that he gets full recovery from that ankle injury,
right,
and it's not going to be something that's going to be a problematic moving forward. But when you have that size and skating ability and hockey sense, that certainly, projects him into that number two, number three role. It really depends on how quickly teams push him into that role. I always go back to say, slower is better in terms of development, especially for defensemen. There's nothing wrong with him going back to university for another year or two. There's nothing wrong with that. It's about you want players that are going to play in your lineup for a long time, not get there quickly. So we've seen a lot of players come up and just blow up badly because they were just pushed too fast too soon, thrown into the deep end of the pool with an anchor and kid just swim and hope for the best. But the kid has a lot of promise. That size and skating ability, range, that fits into the mold of what today's NHL defensemen look like.
You're listening to The People Show. We're joined by Shane Malloy. Shane, plenty of picks were traded at the deadline this year. And in normal years, you know, people are fighting over third, fourth, fifth round picks. But how has the value of a draft pick changed this year based on, you know, teams not maybe getting as many looks or nowhere near the looks that they would in previous years?
Honestly, I don't think the value should change at all. I mean, teams should be prepared. Now, and I've heard from sources, and I've talked to a lot of people, you know, within the different organizations, and there are some teams who they don't think are ready, and you should be ready. So, I mean, and honestly, the value of a third and fourth rounds don't change. One of the things I always find fascinating is that people are, or people within the industry or even teams don't even know the value of what a draft pick is, especially third and fourth rounds. Like, what's the percentage chance of them playing over 200 games? So if you look at a mid third round pick, that's only a 25 to 26% chance of playing more than 200 games in the NHL. So once you get to a certain point in the draft, you get to the fourth to seventh rounds, I would use those picks as fodder for to move up, for trades, to get actual NHL players, because at the end of the day, majority of those players end up playing in your American Hockey League or not at all. I mean, like, the percentage chance, honestly, gentlemen, drops dramatically once you get out of that second round. So that's where the hard work of not only your scouts, but that player development department really, really matters in the end of the day.
Well, and, you know, from Vancouver too, they are going to have a high first round pick, at least based on how everything's kind of looking at. And, you know, of course, you're looking at taking best player available, but considering this organization's need for something down the middle, if they end up picking, say, in that anywhere in that 8 to 12 range, do you see a couple players that potentially could be good fits for Vancouver and where they're trending?
Well, I'd actually go defense if it was me. I mean, if everything being equal and you're sitting at the draft table and you're looking at your list and you have the choice between a defenseman and a centerman, I would take defense based on what they have in their farm system and what they have currently on their roster. But if you're looking at centerman, you're in that 8 to 12 range, Kent Johnson may be a fine pick, particularly the fact he's actually played a lot this year. I mean, if you go through the list, honestly, to say the top 75 players are going to be on any independent list, most likely 65 of them or more have played this season. So there's not a big loss in terms of not being having the opportunity to play or see these players play. So, but at the end of the day, Kent Johnson would be probably a guy I would seriously look at. I wouldn't sleep on Cole Sillinger as well, playing in Sioux Falls right now in the USHL. He's another player I would seriously look at. But for me, gentlemen, not that you want to take need. You should always take best player available. But I think this organization really needs another high-end defenseman.
Shane, there's been a lot of changes in the management of the game as well. Scouting departments, obviously COVID's taken a toll in plenty of markets. We've heard of, you know, potential changes and scouts being let go. Kind of a lasting impact do you think COVID's had on those types of departments? And what are you hearing? You're, you know, one of the most connected people, especially in the scouting and the prospect realm. What have you seen on the back end?
Well, I think one of the things that is going to make a change is, I think owners are going to start looking at, can we utilize video more effectively? Do we have to send people traveling as much as we really do? I think that's going to be an impact. So you're always going to have crossover scouts, and you're always going to have your director of amateur scouting. Those people are going to have to get out and see everybody. But I think there may be a limited travel in terms of the regional scouts. So that may have an impact. I'm curious to see what the impact is actually at the front office level. Is adding more high-level personnel, is expanding the roles of assistant general managers. And instead of having one or two, actually expanding that to three, and maybe having a president of hockey operations as an oversee, the go-between, to manage up to the owner, having a general manager, three assistant general managers. One would be, you know, potentially in charge of the pro and amateur staff. Another one would be in charge of your American League franchise, as well as the player development staff. And then have a third who is responsible for your contract, cap management, your R&D department, as well as your analytics department. Because I think this industry has got too big, especially with, you know, the salary cap coming in. I find it difficult to see how they're going to manage all these situations and still be effective consistently and not make mistakes. It's not about hitting the home runs, gentlemen. It's about not stepping on landmines. And if you look at how other industries are run, especially in Fortune 500 companies, and you take those operational concepts and models and strategies and you apply them to operations in hockey, because it's no different. I mean, they're not building a widget, but, and of course, it's primarily built on performance management of players and your staff. So there's a massive human element, and you take that into consideration. But that doesn't, it's not that much different than any other industry. So why not treat it like that industry? It's not a mom and pop shop anymore. And I think the organizations that treated it at that, as that mom and pop and like that old school mentality, are going to be left behind, and you're going to see more catastrophic mistakes that cause different types of organizations to, you know, be really poor and really bad for a long period of time.
Well, it's having that CEO and also having that corporate structure to your front office, right, Shane? And, you know, maybe the most important job of a president outside of building that structure and having the infrastructure built up, that you have people, you know, that get delegated to, that do their roles, and as you mentioned, avoid stepping on landmines. But is a president's biggest job in today's league, kind of like in CEOs, where they're managing up to investors, that managing up to the owner is the most important job a president can do to allow everybody else to do their jobs to the best of their ability?
Yes, that's a great point. That's one of their main roles. Is the other is to speak to the different stakeholders. You can't underestimate how important the fan base is to these organizations, because this is a legacy organizational identity. It's not like a normal company. Like the legacy that the fans produce, it has a tremendous impact of what the success of the franchise is. And I look to the Vancouver Canucks and to the Buffalo Sabres as long-suffering fans that deserve a Stanley Cup. They really do. So in that respect, as it's structured, you have the president of hockey operations as the go-between and has business acumen attached to that. Not just hockey, but business is critical. And then hire people who actually have domain expertise in certain areas. So start hiring people that have hockey experience, but also have business experience, who have entrepreneurial experience, who understand risk assessment, who understand how to like actually manage people and be leaders effectively, and to be able to understand the different business concepts, so that you're not just relying upon what you did as a player. I'm not throwing, you know, managers that just played under the bus. I'm not. But this industry has become far more sophisticated, and I think you need the people with that domain expertise. If you look at analytics, well, hire somebody who has a PhD in statistics and mathematics. Don't hire somebody with an undergrad. Like you have a multi-million-dollar industry. Hire the best that you can find, because they're going to be well worth it. You know, hire staff that have business degrees who understand economics and finance. And I think that trend is starting to change. You start to look at organizations like Tampa Bay and Toronto and San Jose and other organizations, I think Washington as well, who do it very quietly behind the scenes. You're starting to see those organizations be much more prolific in those areas.
Yeah, and we've seen baseball really dive into that over
Absolutely.
The last number of years. Shane, we really appreciate your time as always. Thank you, and we'll be talking again before the draft for sure.
Absolutely, gentlemen. Have a great day.